Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag.
I'm in a great mood today.
I know, you got your grumpy shirt on. That's appropriate. We didn't have a show last week. We canceled because you were busy.
Dude, I am slammed.
Yeah.
I'm utterly slammed. I'm in, 14 hours easy a day.
That's all right. I've had a cold, so I was happy to have a day of not shooting, let my voice rest. But let's get started. First question from Eduardo. Hi, Gov. He starts with hi, Gov. So I knew right then, this is going to be a question that I'm going to be no use on. And of course, it was a Visual Studio question. Thanks for a superb show, Gov. I have a weird problem with Visual Studio 2012 C# project. After I compile it as part of the solution with six projects, its release version does not run, but the debug one does. When I try to run the release version, it simply returns and nothing is shown. I look in the event viewer and nothing special is posted there. I've checked the properties or the project's configuration, but couldn't find anything that would be causing the behavior. Do you have any hints? A little bit of back and forth, and then he wrote, figured it out.
Figured it out.
Yeah, that's my favorite kind of question. They write back, I got it.
So it was a configuration issue. So C# is managed code. He had it set for only allow 32-bit.
Allow
unsafe code, so managed or unmanaged code.
Yeah.
And didn't have it set for 32-bit only.
Yeah.
So apparently that configuration will cause his particular project to blow up, because assuming that he was calling some unsafe code in there.
Yeah.
And it didn't like it.
Well, glad you figured it out, Eduardo.
We don't get too many Visual Studio project questions.
No, but send any questions you have about anything Microsoft, we don't mind.
It's kind of interesting, because I don't really use Visual Studio much at all.
Hmm.
Just where I am, it's like text editor.
Yeah. Right?
And just a lot of low-level stuff that I just don't use Visual Studio with.
Yeah, I use it a little bit for ScriptTD, but that's pretty much...
Or, personal projects, so I'll, of course, use Visual Studio, but because it is so much more powerful.
Yeah. All right, next question from James. About security update, KB2760600 for OneNote 2010. It seems like no one believes this is an issue. I've already talked with over 7 people about the problem. I see that there's an update, that the update has installed on my system, but if I look at the list of updates, however, it's continuously trying to install again and again. So this is a OneNote 2010 hang, and you had a little bit of back and forth, and what's the result here?
Yeah, like oddly enough, 7 people is not a large number for us. I mean, I know it might seem pretty large, but in any case, you're having a problem. This isn't a Windows update, it's a Microsoft update. It comes from Office.
Yeah.
So I've let the right folks over at Office Update know about this particular issue. And hopefully I'll get some sort of update as to what's going on. But right now, I don't believe they have any word back. Mm-hmm. So we just got this question, yesterday?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
they're a little bit back and forth, so it might have been a couple of days before that, too. But, yeah, it is a known issue now.
Now it's a known issue.
Yep, someone's working on it. So next question from Taro. First of all, great show. I have an issue using IE. Every time I use it, it crashes. After loading and using it for a minute or two, it just freezes with the message stating that the website stopped responding or a complete white screen. The problem's been around since I've gotten this machine, IE9, but now with IE10, the problem still persists. I've seen the problem with IE32 and 64-bit with and without add-ons. The result is always the same. His current config is Windows 7 Pro 6.1.7601 and IE10.0.9200.16521. I created a dump file and put it on SkyDrive for us. So, and he sent a screenshot. And he says, thanks and keep up the great work, of course.
So. I haven't had a chance to look at the dump yet.
Because he sent it 7-zip. Just a little personal information here on Gov. Just what? Well, you just want him to send it or just use zip? Or
just use zip.
I know that I've sent you stuff in RAR and you don't like that. And now you got 7-zip and you had to live through your grumpy shirt here.
The way that they look at it is the compression difference between zip and 7-zip and RAR is just not enough to be worthwhile
yeah.
to have to install a third-party product.
Yeah.
Right? I just want to be able to double-click the thing on any Windows machine and just
sure.
have it open.
I understand. And I just install WinRAR on everything as soon as I get on the machine, so...
Right. And I know a lot of people will say, well, we should have native support for all the various zip extensions out there. Yeah, that would be great,
yeah.
but fact of the matter is that not enough people use all of the odd... compression software out there, and there's...
You should have flying unicorns, too. And
well, yeah, my canonical example is I want a pony.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's also licensing that we'd have to deal with as well, you know, for all of these proprietary kind of formats. So
yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Zip, it's native. Everybody uses it. That's kind of why I prefer it. It's why I can go to any machine and open up a dump
so
file.
So that's what dragged you down with looking at the dump file on this.
Just
but,
a little bit.
Back to the question. What kind of troubleshooting things, what are next steps for this? What do you think?
Well, because you said that he had this problem since he got the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, like, what kind of state that machine is when he got it.
Yeah.
Are you missing any updates for it? I don't know if you are. Some add-ons won't actually show up as an add-on in IE,
yeah.
right? Because any module can hook itself into IE in various forms. So not everything will show up if you go to manage add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
If you start looking at what you've got installed, and you might want to start removing some suspect items, depending on what it is, I couldn't tell you. I have to see a list of what's in your add-on programs. You could also have a virus, I don't know. You could try installing a third-party browser, see if you have any issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I have to do a little bit more investigation on your dump.
So I have to imagine that this machine at one point worked fine.
I don't know, because he said he's had it.
Yeah.
He had it since he had this particular problem since the beginning.
Well, that's true. That is true.
So it might have been, from the OEM, could have been an issue.
Wow, I've never heard of that happening, but okay.
Really?
All right. Okay.
It could also be your AV software, because AV
yeah.
software will hook into your browser, depending on which AV software it is,
yeah.
but it won't actually show up as a managed add-on.
Yeah.
So if you've got something on your AV side, you might want to disable it or uninstall it or turn it off or whatever. Certain things like, LastPass, the password management things may
mm-hmm.
not show up in a managed add-on as well.
Okay.
Like, there's so many different things that could actually be running in the browser that you're not able to see.
Okay, and once Gove gets TugZip installed, he'll check out the dump file, too, and
right.
we'll get back to you on that one. All right, next question from David. I've noticed that my work machine run Windows 8 Enterprise, that after I lock the machine, the display will sleep for about a minute after. Even with my display sleep timeout set to an hour, it's a desktop and I'm running high-performance power settings and can't find any advanced setting to change this behavior.
Just so folks are aware of what we're talking about with the different timeout settings, you go to your power options, change when the computer sleeps, turn off your display. In this particular case, he's talking about the lock screen.
Yeah.
So the Win 8 lock screen, it's pretty much by design when you're set to lock that soon thereafter your monitor will power down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know off the top of my head if there's a way to change that timeout.
Yeah.
Because it is a power saving measure. Right,
yeah.
We're all about power saving. There's really little point when you're...
Some people are all about it. Some people waste power.
A lot
power.
Of people.
Yeah.
Some people waste power.
Yeah.
The other function could actually be your monitor itself could have a timeout setting. So if you're on a desktop, actually check your monitor to see if it has an auto power off.
Okay. And, of course, Magic Andre 1981 is going to be out there checking to make sure that there isn't a...
Setting.
A setting for this.
Probably.
Sure
it's one of those things that I don't really look for.
Yeah. Okay. From MK, 1001 in the comments, wrote, iExplorer EXE hangs until process is killed. This seems to occur on Windows 8 as well, seen on two different laptops with different configurations and add-ons, except for Flash. According to Analyze Wait Chain from Task Explorer, the child Internet Explorer EXE waits to finish network I.O., but according to Process Explorer, there's no open connections. Once a child Internet Explorer is killed, the parent exits as well. Mostly it seems to happen when many tabs are open with Flash content. And then Dax 1792, one of my favorite numbers, wrote, I also saw it on Windows 8 after I emailed the show. I don't think it's happened since the last Flash update, 11.6.602.180. And then MK1001 wrote back and said, it still occurs for me, although the latest updates are installed. Specifically, this might occur on a system that is, say, not shut down daily, but put to sleep in hibernation. Looking at the stack on the thread that is supposed to be waiting, according to Analyze Wait Chain, there's no Flash Player functions on it. There are some WinSock functions, though, and that's pretty much as he can make out.
Based on the current information, I don't know enough of what's going on. You might have a problem with your NIC driver.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this might be AV software that is at the network stack level. I would probably need a kernel dump in order to actually figure this one out.
Okay.
A user mode may not be enough to actually see why the process is still hanging around.
Okay. All right. So, MK, send us a kernel dump if you haven't already. I know he sent us one dump, but I don't think it was a kernel dump.
It wasn't a kernel dump.
Okay. So do that, and we'll check it out. From Bruno, in Windows 7, it seems it's only possible to view a file version's number in the properties dialog if it's a DLL-EXE file. If the file name extension is AX, it won't show the file version number. Are there any settings I can change to enable this for AX files?
Nope.
All right.
Rename it as DLL. It's hard-coded.
Okay. All right. Next question. The system date on the
hang on.
Yes.
I just thought of something. You can install third-party software that will actually read a shell extension that will read that and bring up a version tab if you wanted to. But there's nothing in the OS that is native that will do that
for you.
Do
you want to name a product?
No.
Okay, good.
Search for it.
All right. the system date on the taskbar shows year, month, day, like in the military. How do I fix it to read month, day, year?
I personally like having it as year, month, day.
Okay.
However, there is a way to fix this. If you go to Control Panel and under Region, this is basically a region control thing. You can change your location to what your home location is. You're probably set for either Canada or something in the European Union where they have that set. But if you're set in the U.S., you shouldn't have it. Otherwise, you know, check this date format out. And then you can reset it, and that will show properly in your time dialog.
Okay, that's easy. All right, from Gaurav says, question one, as per Gove, in case of installing the latest NVIDIA drivers, there's no need to uninstall, just install right on top of the existing one. Does that hold true for other device drivers, e.g. sound, network drivers, chipset, modems, card readers, printers, etc., in all Windows, XP, Vista 7, and 8?
It should. Especially if you're just getting driver updates from Windows Update for third-party driver packages, again, it really should. Most of the time, if it requires uninstallation, their driver package itself will run the uninstall of the previous one and then install over top.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it should just install over top for most third-party packages. Again, there nothing is an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is a problem, they'll usually tell you ahead of time. The setup program will say, you know, previous version must be uninstalled prior to installing this version.
Yeah.
Blah. And then, you know, you have to go through it manually or they do it for you. But there's usually never a need to actually uninstall the third-party driver to go back to Windows drivers on your own and then install the third-party package.
Okay. He has a second question here, too. He says, I know some of rootkit and bootkit detection removal tools, e.g. Norton Power Eraser from Symantec, TDSS Killer from Kaspersky, Bitdefender rootkit removal. My question is, how do I deal with these types of malware if almost publicly available rootkit removal tools fail to find their presence or eliminate them? How do I remove them manually? What are other best tools to deal with these types of malwares?
Well, first off, you're making an assumption that you actually do have malware.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of these tools are saying that you don't have it and they're all up to date, you may not actually have malware.
Yeah.
Right? You could have just a bug. You could have a buggy driver. You could have something else wrong with your system that is not considered technically malware.
Yeah.
And frankly, if you have malware on the system and nothing is detecting it, but you think something is still wrong, you can't trust that system anyway. You can't trust anything that you would do to that system to help repair it. So your really only choice is to wipe and load.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain types of malware, if you're still on a BIOS-based system, BIOS boot kits, that are extremely difficult, if at all possible, to get rid of without flashing the BIOS as well.
Yeah.
And they can hide from pretty much anything. If you're on newer systems, secure boot system, EFI-based systems, you're far less likely to be in that kind of situation. But you can't really do anything. If you suspect malware and nothing is detecting it and you want to try to get back to a known good state, or you knew that you had a known good state at some point in time,
mm-hmm.
You can either do like system restore or a wipe and load to get back to a known good.
Okay. From David, I feel like this question may have been covered before, and you are correct, but I have a very small SSD at work, only 40 gig, and my app data folder is eating up a lot of that space. Is there any way to move this folder off to my larger drive?
In an unsupported manner, sure. In a supported manner, no. Unsupported manner, you can create a junction from your app data to the separate drive and move stuff over. The supported manner would be to, as you're installing Windows, you have an unattended file that says where your user profile is.
Yeah.
Put your user profile on the bigger drive. Then yeah. Everything will be fine. I prefer that method only because, if I'm going to go through that kind of pain, I'll just reinstall the OS. Because mm-hmm. I don't find reinstalling the OS to be that difficult or that onerous.
Yeah. It's kind of fun, actually, for me. I enjoy it.
Well, it used to be fun. Now it's really just, click, done.
Yeah.
So I don't really count it as being fun.
Yeah. All right.
It's so painless as to not be interesting.
To each his own. All right. At my school, next question. At my school, the Panasonic Interactive Smart Board shows a different message on the Windows 7 logon screen. Instead of Control-Alt-Delete to log on, it reads press Control-Alt-Delete or use the Windows Security button to log on. What is the Windows Security button and where is it located?
So it seems that you are on a tablet machine or some sort of portable
wall
machine.
Wall display, smart board, yeah.
Smart board, right?
Yeah.
So it's a touch display.
Probably, yeah.
So we detect that, and you should be, the display, the system itself, should have a little button on it that you can press, and that's a security button. It invokes a secure attention sequence, which is the equivalent of Control-Alt-Delete.
Yeah.
And we do that because...
When did those start showing up? Was that around Vista time?
It was around the Vista time frame,
okay.
Yeah. And we did that because you don't have a keyboard attached, so
yeah.
You can't do Control-Alt-Delete.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the
and
the,
if I remember nubbing. Right, because I think I had one on my HP TX2.
Mm-hmm, the TX2, yep.
And I think it had like a little lock symbol on it or
yep.
something.
Yep.
So, look for a little button that has a lock symbol. They're usually kind of surface mounted, so it's not something that you hit by accident.
Right.
And again, your machine, would that message show up if your machine doesn't have one of those, or is it something that has to be detected?
I believe it has to be detected.
Okay. So if you have that message, you probably have a button somewhere.
Right.
Now, with the smart board, the board part might be separate from the computer device.
Right.
So there might be like a computer under a desk or something that's actually driving that device, and the computer would probably be the one that has that button on it
right.
anyway.
Right.
So it might not be on that display, but yeah, keep on looking. All right. Next question. Is there a way to automatically minimize all windows after I enter the password in the lock screen in Windows 7, Windows 8? I like to imagine what caused this question. but there's not a way to just like hit Windows L to lock and everything gets minimized.
Right.
I mean, you could make some kind of script, though,
sure.
right, that
sure.
does that. But there's you've got kind of a,
yeah, I mean,
a
it's,
fix that'll do
it's
it.
It's WinKey M, right? So
yeah.
if you, the moment that you unlock the screen, you can hit WinKey M, and that'll minimize everything.
Yeah. So when you type in your password and you hit enter, you
mm-hmm.
can do WinKey M,
mm-hmm.
and that'll do essentially the same thing.
Yeah. So if I'm locked right now, right? I'm logging in.
Too late.
I hit the lock. Let's try this again. So yeah. it would
Your
flash.
Wife still saw what was on the screen, so.
Yeah, so you'd have to minimize.
Do it before you hit Windows L.
Yeah, you have to minimize ahead of time.
Yeah, or you could do some kind of script.
Because you're really at the point of, like, your reaction time.
Mm-hmm. And figuring out when do I hit it.
Right.
Because if you do Win M twice, it'll minimize and then bring it back, won't it?
No, Win Key M.
Just minimize. That's just right. Minimize. Okay. Yep. And we've got the Windows shortcuts here, of course. And there you go.
Yeah, so this KB article for Windows 7, keyboard shortcut for Windows, is primarily geared to explore shortcuts, keyboard shortcuts, but they'll also talk about, you know, if you have the natural keyboard with the IntelliType software installed, what additional things that you can get.
It's a good all-up list, so, and yeah. We'll show you something else in the picks of the week, too. All right, next question. I recently formatted one of my computers and have forgotten to turn on remote desktop. Now I'm trying to grab some files off that computer, but I have no way of accessing it. I have an administrative account and can access the local network, remote desktop, another computer that's on the network, but I can't figure out how to enable remote desktop or administration. How can I remote desktop on a Windows 8 computer from another Windows 7 computer on the same local network? So what they're saying is their boss locked their office and they want to... No, I don't know what caused the question, but I like to apply my own scenarios to these.
Right. Now, the solution that I've got... Well, there's a few different solutions, but there's kind of a reason why we ship Windows in a secure, isolated default, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want people being able to access your machine remotely.
Yeah.
But you have admin privs, so if file and printer sharing is turned on, then you should be able to access your files directly that way as well. If you need to do some additional processing on it ahead of time and you really do need the remote access, you can do something like this. You create a reg script file that will turn on remote desktop by setting this particular key.
Okay.
Save this as a reg file and then use psexec, sysinternal tools. What this will do is you can run a command on a remote machine.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just so you have admin access, you can run psexec, copy the reg file to that machine, run your command, which will be, you know, reg whack import this reg file.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you have to reboot the machine in order for that to take, you can use shutdown, the command line tool shutdown. And I will use it interactively. So you can add the computer that you want, you know.
Okay.
Foo. And you can tell it to restart, reboot, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that will allow remote desktop. That'll turn it on. And you can connect remotely to it afterwards. There are other things, like if you set up your machine for Windows Remote Management, WinRM.
Yeah.
Which I currently do for all of my machines is, as part of the install process, I turn that on,
mm-hmm.
Which will give you a secure, an SSH-like input into the machine.
Cool. Okay. Interesting. I wouldn't have thought you could do all that, but I have learned. Nice. All right. Pick of the week time. Pick of the week. First one we have are some new Kinect enhancements that came out this week. And we'll show them here. This is talking about a mall scenario where these will help with doing some interactive stuff in malls and wall computing. But really, it's just a couple of new gestures that were added to Kinect. They've got a function for dragging, and I think there's one, what was the one, you make a fist or something like that to do like a scroll, I think.
Okay.
And a push. You can push a button by doing like a push command. So, yeah, interesting. One of the other features of it is you can make 3D models out of things with your Kinect. And you can see an example there. So, use smoothing in your 3D modeling program. And you can just start there. And if you have something you want to make a 3D model of, you can use your Kinect and then go into your 3D editor and take it from there.
What do you use for your 3D modeling?
I haven't done anything lately. The one thing that I have been playing with quite a bit with Kinect, especially, is iClone from Reolution, I think is the name of the company. Really cool. In fact, it was our pick of the week one time just recently. And that has a lot of 3D models that I got for it. And so I've been playing around with that, but I haven't used, like, I mean, I would imagine I'd probably do, like, AutoCAD? What do you use?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of Autodesk tools that can be used for it.
I used
3D Studio Max, of course.
Yeah. I used to use 3D Studio Max quite a bit when I was doing old 3D stuff in Flash. And I think more than anything, I use more like consumer level apps like Poser. So I used to use Poser quite a bit. But yeah, I haven't done anything recently. So yeah, looks
cool.
Though.
You know, for people to send us, you know, what they might have created with 3D modeling software if they have access to 3D printers. Because, you know, Staples is coming up with getting access to 3D printers.
A really good one, the Objet 3D printer. So that's pretty cool, yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what people come up with to...
let us know in the comments what you're working on. I'd love to hear what other people are doing. I just haven't had time for it, but I would love to do it. Next pick of the week we have is from the App Store, and this is a Windows 8 handbook, and this came out this week as well. I've just downloaded onto my machine. I haven't looked at it yet, but it's got some... Windows 8 specific things that'll help get you ramped up on how to use Windows 8, closing an app, changing apps. I'm sure there's keyboard shortcuts right there. So you can learn all the latest keyboard shortcuts, which I love, be a power user, and be up to speed and work quickly. So check that out. It's free, and we'll link to it in the show notes. And then the last one that we have is just an article that I wanted to talk about real quick about someone who switch to a Surface Pro as their main desktop. So, did you have that one up too?
I did not have that one.
Okay. Well, the long and short of that one is they switched to a Surface Pro, and they weren't entirely sure if it was going to be a good enough machine for them to want to use it all the time. And they're like, "Yeah, this is my main machine now." Mm-hmm. And I'll link to this in the show notes as well. They used one of the things that they did, because I was talking to Nathan from Cloud Cover Show about his Surface Pro. He was saying the same thing. He's like, this has just replaced every machine that I have now, which is nice because it's portable, light, throw it in a bag. But his one complaint with it was he just has the one desktop monitor when he goes back and hooks up at his desk. It's got the micro HDMI, and then it goes out to a monitor. And he's like, I kind of wish I had two displays. But if you're a Microsoft employee and you get this as your machine refresh, there's an accessory that you can get from Targus that it's a dock. And it's a USB 3 dock. So you get back to your desk and you plug the one USB 3 cable up to it. It gives you an additional USB 3 port and a few, I think like four USB 2 ports. And it also has two monitor outs. So that'll allow you to have two displays as well as your Surface display. And that's what this person was using, too. So.
Yeah, I mean, my Surface Pro is pretty indispensable.
You have a Surface Pro?
I've had
one. Why don't you bring it to the show?
Because that one's my personal machine.
All right. Yeah, I'm still waiting on mine. I ordered it the first chance I got, and it's still on back order, so I'm still waiting for mine. But I'm looking very forward to it. So
yeah, in terms of like the portability aspect and what it does, it does absolutely replace everything. You know,
yeah,
hotel rooms, right? So for people that don't know, it's actually a micro display port.
Yeah,
right, for the Surface Pro. I've got a dongle for it, and if we go to hotels, don't stay at them too frequently, but I do travel.
Yeah.
And it's just great to hook up to the hotel TV, and you have Netflix, right, on your tablet.
Just run it right out to the TV.
Just run it right out to the TV, and it's
so
perfect.
So here's every experience I've had staying in a hotel where I do that, and I remember to bring the HDMI cable, and then I get there, and the TV doesn't have a way to switch to the other input for HDMI. And so what I think I'm going to try next is I want to get a universal remote that I can just throw in my bag, like one of those little teeny ones.
Mm-hmm.
And when I get there, I'll just look at what model TV it is and then program the remote so that I get the input button to switch to the HDMI.
Right.
Because I'm going to be tricky like that.
Although some of them, like LodgeNet, some of the hotels that have their built-in TVs, you may not be able to do that at all. Like,
because
it's like
true.
An unlock code in order to get access to that. You know, they're not just normal TVs. They're basically computer monitors.
Yeah, and some of the hotels, too, that I've been in, you have to switch to, like, a real low channel, like 00, and it does the input for the HDMI on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's just never worked for me.
Right.
So I got that, too. But, yeah, I'm going to try the universal remote next and see how that works. All right, that's the show for this week. So if you want to write us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com, or you can leave comments in the show notes, and we'll get back to you there. We prefer the email so we can go back and forth, and we'll see you next week.
Remember, dumps, screenshots.
Zip.
And as much description in terms of what you have on the machine or what you've recently done to the machine is very helpful.
And you say that because you don't have to read the long question. That's awesome.
Well, no, because we can shorten the question.
That's true. All right, we'll cut the question. All right, see you next week.